blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tadyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharamam Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tadyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tadyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. For is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates illusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born for karma. I adhere to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. hearing to pain and suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and then end suffering.
Folks, for you, you're welcome to get a back jacket if you make you more comfortable. Well, anyone's welcome to get a back jacket. Just a reminder, this group is recorded for our monthly donors. What would you like to look at today? Sequoia.
Well, a few things.
Lori, can you hear back there? Okay.
Yesterday, I received news about the death of someone that, although I wouldn't say she was a close friend, I didn't have like a personal relationship with her. You know, But I was deeply affected by the news, and
I'm going to reflect anyway. Sequoia.
Okay.
You were deeply affected by the news of the death of someone who you didn't have a personal relationship with,
right.
And yet you were, I project, interested in the extent to which it affected you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Very interested in that, and it felt. The relationship felt like a lot like the relationship that gets established in the privileged environment.
Uh-huh.
And that it just felt like a real heart connection
mm-hmm.
with her. I don't know how to say it, but it's like,
yeah,
I see your heart.
I know exactly what you're...
Yeah.
That what we are conditioned to believe is that it's with very intimate relationships that we actually feel the depth of connection.
Yeah.
But the fact that it touched you so much
yeah.
actually opened you to the possibility of an intimacy and connection with someone that is possible even though it's impersonal.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that I saw was like, oh my gosh, the grief I feel is, you know, I kept, but Rose is like, you know, family members passing and things like that where Supposedly.
Yeah, you're supposed to feel that way.
This deep connection that you feel a whole lot of grief yet with, and yet I felt in a way more grief
mm-hmm.
for this person that I, you know, knew for a relatively short period of time, you know, maybe a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that was arising, and then...
May I stop you there, Sequoia?
Sure.
Because I want to reflect that.
Uh-huh.
Because the interesting the thing that you're noticing is there's a conditioned expectation or belief about who you need to feel grief for.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that this person who you're not close to and therefore shouldn't be feeling so much grief for, mm-hmm. you actually experienced grief. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, right? Because it really tells you something.
Yeah.
That it's that heart connections are the ones that get touched.
Yeah. Yes. And that those relationships that are all about the content and the, you know, I don't know, you know,
well, the condition relationships.
Conditioned relationships.
Our relationship of conditioning,
yes,
not a relationship
exactly.
with the heart.
And it's such a wonder, you know, why don't I feel closer to that person, or why don't, you know, and it's just, it's very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there's that whole conditioned relationship that is not at all satisfying, like any relationship with conditioning,
mm-hmm.
internal or external.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow this feels connected to this, but I had a dream last night that felt like the gift of this and something. And that was, I saw in the dream a lot of disparate people. And I saw that I was saying to them, we have to, that disparity or that separateness that we hear and we foster is what's evil.
Uh-huh.
That it we have to look for the commonality.
Uh-huh.
And then everybody was like, oh yeah,
uh-huh.
and they're all coming together and, you know, feeling the connection. And when I woke, I remembered Sherry talking about this years ago. She used to make that long trip from the Bay Area up here, and she would drive at night because that was in the days before every car had air conditioning and it was hot. And she would turn on Christian radio to listen to it. I remember I was pretty new, and I thought, she was listening to Krishna. I know, it's like all these beliefs and stuff, you know, just kind of
use everything in our experience.
Exactly. And then she would talk about how she would see the commonality with what the person was saying, you know, this minister was saying, and her own practice. And in fact, to the point where she eventually donated to his ministry because she was getting a lot out of it and listening to him, and, you know, she wanted to donate back. So it just all came together. It was like, mm-hmm. oh, I see what was being pointed at now.
Yes.
It was like looking for that place mm-hmm. of the heart.
Yes.
Where we all connect.
Looking for the place in the heart where we all connect.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can reflect all of those in order to bring it together to what what the teaching is, right? Which is that sense of, it's the conversation that we listen to that maintains the separation,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of what was in your dream, that all of these disparate people are there and the differences mm-hmm. is what is evil.
Mm-hmm.
But if we drop the process that creates differences and move to a process that looks for commonality, which is what Sherry was doing in listening to the Christian minister, is what is true for me in what you're saying, not how the belief that I'm a Buddhist and you're a Christian, we're looking for what's different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And so if we move to that place of looking for the connection, then what we experience is connection. If we attend to the process that separates, then what we feel is separate.
Yes.
It's what we feel is separation.
Yeah.
We don't feel connection.
Yeah.
And for those people with whom we've had relationships that's based on what's different, we don't feel that grief.
Yes.
Because we have never experienced true connection.
Exactly. It's just like being denied that connection that the heart wants so deeply. And
or believing the illusion that the separation is real.
Yes.
And that the connection doesn't always exist.
Yeah.
Even if we don't experience it.
Yeah. Wow. There's just so much in that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. That the connection has always been there.
That the connection is what's true.
Yeah.
The separation is the illusion that is maintained because we're attending to that process of finding differences.
Yes. 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 And seeing how, you know, it doesn't even need an external person, how that just goes on internally as well.
Yes.
Just looking for the, it's like, just looking for the different, I mean, how, I don't know, how I'm at war with myself.
You're not at war with yourself.
Yes.
Well, if I may, to bring that to the universal of it, is when we drop the process of differences, mm-hmm. we're not at war with ourselves, because the process of differences falls away.
Yeah.
Then all you have is the process of love or connection for this and for everything else. Yeah, and that's the hope in it, right?
Yeah.
Because we have a choice. If we see it as clearly as you're seeing it, then we know that we're either attending to that which separates and is looking for differences, or we're attending to that which are not, in which case we have the connection that we see. And all those people in the dream are going, yes,
yes.
because it's the deepest longing of every heart.
Of every heart, yeah.
We're all looking for unconditional love.
Yeah.
And this group of people is here to look for a process by which that is their reality.
Yeah.
Not just the longing.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to see, I mean, I just have to say that it just feels, you know, time and time again, it's like to see how life just supports, just gives support, you know. I've been practicing for a while with that. I choose unconditional love. I choose unconditional love. I choose unconditional love, no matter what.
Yes.
And then, you know, this just feels like
I have unconditional love.
Just an evolution of that practice of just staying with that and not trying to figure out what unconditional love is. Just saying, I choose it.
Yeah.
And then just see what's offered in response to that. So, mm-hmm.
And to have that wonderful gift of life support as mm-hmm. in having an instance like this, which shows how we are capable of unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those places where we may think that love is not what we choose, we are choosing it.
Yeah. I appreciate that we are capable of unconditional love.
Because this is saying there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. You're not lovable. You're not capable of loving.
Right.
And that drops.
Mm-hmm.
And what we feel arising for us, given the circumstances, oh, wow, that sun feels so beautiful on my skin.
Yeah.
I love the feel of the cool morning air.
Yeah.
I feel so much grief from the love of this person who is another human being, who I didn't know in the conditioned sense, but whose heart I saw.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, just another case of it just nattering on about the opposite of what is so, and being denied that experience. So, lots of big gifts.
It's the truth, right? If we're here for it, everything's a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Who else? Dan.
So this is the first time I've sat in, well over a year. So I was anxious approaching it and not sure kind of what was going to happen. The physical, like, uncomfortableness of sitting was definitely there, but it was interesting because I was reminded on why I'm back here after 3 years, and it was this sub-personality of just like anxiety and like impatience and just like, it's crazy. Like, I just find myself in my daily life just really unable to tolerate like certain noises, certain sounds, certain people, certain conversations. And as I'm sitting here, it's like my head is thinking about things that are annoying me at the very moment.
Uh-huh.
It's like trying to bring it back to the counting, trying to bring it back to the counting, and it's just like super, super strong, and just kind of was able to notice it and was definitely frustrated that it was coming out right now, but remembering when I left the retreat last time that I was able to really kind of connect with myself and those thoughts and feelings weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like a hope of like, okay, this is why you're here. It's okay that, you know, you're experiencing this right now and this is what you're here to work on.
Wonderful. So I have to, you've said so many important things that's completely worth underlining, right? So one, What I project the sit was an experience of extreme awareness. Right? It's what Sherry said in the DVD this morning, that we don't sit in order to stop our thoughts, whereas we sit in order to experience everything that is going on for us. And you were able to do that, right? A very successful meditation in that sense of the word, which is, I feel the physical discomfort. I'm watching the thoughts that are going on for me that make me anxious and uncomfortable and distracted and wanting to not be that. And all of these various things that before we just go, oh, that's just me thinking, right? That's just what's going on for me. But to be able to sit on a cushion for 30 minutes where the structure is don't move, watch what's going on, assist you to see that you have the capability, the capacity to actually watch that, which means that you're not it. Right? That's what it opens up for us, that it's a process that's going on and I'm able to sit with that. And as you said, I'm sitting here watching what's annoying me or what's irritating happening as I'm sitting here. And that's just a gift, because that's the first step that we take in having a different choice or having a different experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And to know that you've had this experience before, you've come on retreat, you've watched this process, you've had the experience of being able to, it sounds like, not attend to that distraction. And so you know the possibility.
But there's a terror and a fear that I won't. It's like now that I've seen it, it's kind of like before the first retreat, it was like ignorance was bliss.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like another sub-personality was created after the last retreat, because it's like, well, why can't you be like that? Why can't you be like you were when you left the last retreat?
Well, let's keep going with this retreat to see whether that's actually a sub-personality or just an annoying voice in your head that says, oh, you should be like that. Because we were looking at this last night in group, right? That fear is also only ever created by that voice in the head. So it has a lot to gain by talking to you and telling you that sit in terror of what's going to happen. Be afraid of what's going to happen. And if you're listening to it, as we were talking with Sequoia, what we experience is fear and terror, not presence.
No.
Right? And that would be an interesting thing for us to explore, to see how real that is. Is that truly your experience? Because I project that as you were watching it telling you to be terrified and saying whatever it is that's annoying you, you were able to sit here through it all. Yeah? Yeah. Good. Lots to come. Thank you. June.
That was very interesting. The meditation instructions are to just sit.
Just sit.
And count.
And count.
And maintain the posture. Mm-hmm. And notice sensations and thoughts and the quality of the thoughts. And there is that thing that endlessly wants to say too simple. Mm-hmm. It's got to be more complex than that. Uh-huh. There has to be more to it than that.
There has to be more to it than that. Mm-hmm.
And blessedly, lately, I am more able just to sit. Mm-hmm. And carry that into daily life. Mm-hmm. And
carry that in the quality of being able to listen to the voice that wants to tell you how to live your life, well, while you're living your life.
Well, yes, that and just being in the body, being in the senses, being in my shoes is the way that it...
important.
And right along with it on that parallel track is that voice, those voices, just saying something else. You got to do something else.
Uh-huh.
You have to work harder somehow, mm-hmm, to be the person who is a good Zen student or something, you think. Cameron,
can you hear? Okay. I am going to reflect you. So that that lately there's much, it's much more available to just be in your shoes, to be here, to be in the body, to be in the senses, and you're still aware of a voice that says, well, you know, you've got to do something more, it can't be this simple, you can't just be in your shoes in order to be a good student, good Zen student.
Noticing the voices that have their yes perhaps is quick, bringing attention back to this in the present moment is pretty quick, lots of the time.
So the ability to notice that that's going on is pretty quick, and to redirect the attention to the moment is also quick most of the time.
Most of the time.
And, or is there a but there?
Well, and lovely, even when I choose some of my addictions, distraction, entertainment, whatever, the judgment that wants to come up when the awareness is there that I've been kind of lost is very quickly noted. Thank you for that judgment. It's not
very helpful
back here in my shoes, in the body, with the breath, over and over. And there's nothing wrong.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong.
Well, so let me reflect that last bit to catch everyone up, and then let me ask you something. So, even when there is a movement of choice towards the distractions or entertainment or whatever else that pulls you away from the moment, there is a thank you for that which comes in and says, okay, well, you did that thing again, and so you shouldn't have, or you're not a Zen, good Zen student for having chosen a poison. There's the ability to say,
thank you for your input.
Thank you for your input. It's not very helpful, but it chooses to come back to the moment. To the moment. And the sense of there's nothing wrong. No matter what's going on, there is nothing wrong. Would you say, June, there's a belief, though, that's still indulged, that there is something wrong?
Oh, well, anything that is not right here, right now, its life depends on there being something wrong.
That's right, right? Because if we look at how meditation instruction is given, is to hold in awareness whatever comes up, including a voice that says there's nothing wrong. But I project the experiences, we can hold everything in awareness, but the voice of there's something wrong is outside of that, something we continue to believe, because that's the lens from which the whole experience is viewed, as opposed to the other experience of having the lens of including that voice, there's nothing wrong. Right? We fall for that. We fall for whenever the voice says there's something wrong or it's too simple or whatever else, we move out of that place in meditation where everything is okay, because that voice saying something wrong implies that is not so. And that's what we fall for.
It's a subtle one.
It's a subtle one, yes. Yeah, by attending to it, it includes, it changes the lens to, from in awareness, everything's included.
Yeah, in awareness, everything is included.
Yeah, and we're paying attention to all of it, not from a place of choosing what is right and what's wrong, but simply, oh, this is what it is. So the place I was going to offer you is, so, yeah, I'm coming to gratitude to go, thank you for that. That was not a very helpful place to go. I'm here, thank you for that.
So that's a little facetious. Thank you for your input.
Yeah, it is facetious, right? But it's good. It's like, okay, well, whatever, right? Thank you. You can keep your opinion to yourself. But I cease to cherish opinions. right? Yeah. Coming back to in this moment, whatever you have to say, I'm not giving you any attention. Because if I do, then I just left that place of gratitude to a place of there's something wrong.
Yeah. And a huge reason I'm not giving you any attention is because you are a one-trick pony.
Yes.
You have one thing to say, and you say it over and over and over.
And, yeah. And we don't have to listen.
No, no, no.
Thank you. Okay, Rebecca, and then Scott.
So in my experience, you know, we just talk a lot about dropping the conversation. And in my experience, what is so helpful...
And the conversation you're referring to so that everybody is on board is just basically what we call the voices.
Yeah, the voices, the internal conversation, the incessant yammer
uh-huh.
all the time. But that can be pretty challenging, it, when there's not this awareness that that's a conversation.
Uh-huh.
And so, and to me, there are layers and layers and layers and layers of getting it, of distinguishing what's a conversation. So, you know, kind of the...
Well, what's a thought? That what's going on in my mind that's just not me thinking?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's a, you know, there's sort of the blatant... You're an Indian, you should have been here, whatever, you know, that it hurts so much, you know, that eventually that we can let go of those, you know, but they just get more and more subtle.
Uh-huh.
And so, so I, you know, it's so much fun to see, oh, that's a conversation.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't seen it as a conversation before, and I thought, oh, that's just kind of how I am.
Uh-huh.
You know, and when that happens, it just breathes all the energy and life into my practice.
Uh-huh. So you're right. What you're noticing is the enjoyment that comes from a dawning awareness, a dawning insight that something you had not considered was the voices before is the voices now, and it's a moment of liberation. It's a moment of freedom.
Yeah. And what I
and energy, something.
And
like.
Energy, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I just saw in that previous conversation is that the glue that tends to stick it to, you know, seems to hold it in my, kind of not in my awareness. The glue that seems to make it feel like my skin, where I can't really distinguish it as a conversation, is this subtle little. There's nothing wrong.
Tell me, it comes down to that.
Uh huh. Uh-huh. Well, it does. Yeah. And that the ability, the moment that I can distinguish it, oh, that's a conversation, it feels exactly like, you know, how when you have something old that was glued on something and then all of a sudden it just falls off.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that glue just didn't stick in anymore. Yeah, you know, it's just old.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what it feels like. You know, that there's nothing, there's something wrong. It's like, oh, that's just an idea that just didn't stick in anymore.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So just for us to bring it back to this retreat, what you're saying is when you notice that what the subtext, the message that is embodied, that you're feeling is there's something wrong, when as soon as you tune into that, it's possible to know that is the voices, and that's what is that old piece of glue falling off.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer something that sticks because you've recognized it for what it is.
Yes. And it's things like, it's just all of the different avenues of practice that make the glue unstick.
Yeah. So you have to do the work
uh-huh.
of awareness, uh-huh. or as Dana was pointing us to, when you sit and you meditate and you watch all of the ways in which you're irritated and I'm annoyed and I'm anxious and I'm whatever, all of those are words that the voices use to tell us there's something wrong. It doesn't blatantly say there's something wrong, there's something wrong, there's something wrong. But there are all of these experiences that are pointing to an orientation of there's something wrong.
Uh-huh.
And when you clue into that orientation, there's the ability to step out of it because you go, oh, those are the voices.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't stick to me anymore.
Yeah, and it does seem to take a while, you know?
Yes, yes. You have to realize that you are, first of all, there's some voice in your head.
Uh-huh.
And the voice in your head that says I'm anxious or I'm irritated is actually pointing to a process of there's something wrong. That takes a while, right?
Yeah.
But and doing that practice assists you to see it and
yeah.
catch it.
And it realized, so like when I had an experience like I had last night where I really got to look at this, this is a conversation, you know?
Uh-huh.
And because it, you know, it had me looking over here and thinking that, and then, you know, when you just make that subtle, it's you that's a conversation,
uh-huh.
you know? Anyway, when we get that blessed movement of recognition, that's what is the convincing element that all of this practice is really doing something.
Uh-huh.
I don't always feel like it's working
yeah.
or it's doing something or anything until that blessed little kisses from life or those little blessings just drop in, those little awarenesses. And then it's just like, I'm so glad I'm practicing because otherwise, how in the world would I have ever seen that? You know, I could have gone to my deathbed never having seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But they just fall away because of those, you
yes.
know, showing up.
Yes.
Showing up.
Yeah. I think someone said it in group last night that what it requires is a behavior change.
Uh-huh.
And the behavior change, because the intellectual understanding of any concept is useless. It's actually a hindrance,
yeah.
right? Because it's just more fodder for something to say, you're not doing what you understand.
Mm-hmm.
But once we realize that it's a practice, that we can actually do something consistently in order to wear away the attention on those voices,
mm-hmm.
what we're actually implementing mm-hmm. is the behavior change that makes a difference for us.
Yeah.
And if we don't implement that behavior change, if we don't practice that behavior change, we can't actually make the difference for ourselves.
Exactly. If we don't implement that behavior change, the glue stays sticky
yeah.
in our whole lives.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will wear out and it will just fall off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's wisdom to know that that's what's missing. The practice is what's missing. Because every one of us knows what it's going to take to make a difference for ourselves.
Yeah.
And we just need to get into that juicy place of practice to see it.
Yeah. So worth it.
So worth it. Thank you. Scott.
Well, as was mentioned, we're on retreat, which is very, very exciting. And,
yes.
You know, the courageous folks that came here probably think this is just for them, but there's always a workshop available if you're doing awareness practice.
Yes. Life is that. Life is the workshop, right, Scott?
Life is the workshop, and we're always on retreat. So, and I'm seeing that. I'm in the middle of one right now.
Uh-huh.
And, gosh, what I keep... So, you know, people hear it say things like, you know, you gotta let go of control, and you're not in control, and, you know, let life, and that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean you're actually doing it or practicing it or seeing it how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just been watching the last 2 days how often... there's a plan about how things are going to go.
Yes.
And even though, again, intellectually I know that could change at any moment, that happens here all the time.
Still, yes, at a drop of a hat. You have to pivot and run in the other direction.
Exactly, which is actually really fun.
Uh-huh.
Unless you're kind of...
So deeply attached to the way you want to do it and how it's going to go. And, oh my God, I can't
yes.
take a shower because I have to run and clean the outhouses.
Well, that's exactly...
Exactly
the kind of stuff that's been happening.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so now I'm going to go to the shower. And either I get communication, you know, from the monastery, or it just drops in. Actually, you know, there needs to be water at this outhouse. There's no water there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll do that, you know. And it's like, okay, well now, but now that that's done, then this will happen.
Yes.
And then, you know, it's fun to, you know, I appreciate Scott who organizes things. And he's got his list and he sets all these things up for like this morning. You know, we had a workshop this morning. And that's great. And I just like to remember, that doesn't mean that's going to help how things are going to go.
No.
It's like, okay, so I got this. I even have a place to have my tea. There's a little 5 minute, you're going to fill it. Yeah. And then it comes in. There's actually a major task that you're responsible for. That needs to be taken care of right now.
Uh-huh.
And I can just feel the system, like, you know, like shaking and that kind of that tension. But there's nothing else to do with that. Like, I'm not going to be able to be tense and do that and get ready for the workshop. So I have to let it go.
Yes.
You know, to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. You know, and then just to kind of watch how things come in. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that you get to see that life's actually just unfolding and happening, no matter what plans I make or how much tension I hold in my body or how I think things should go. Things are just unfolding.
Yes.
They're just mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm. And so I can choose to get on board with that, or I can, you know...
Be tense and be miserable.
Be tense and be miserable.
Uh-huh.
And it's fun to watch that and to go through that process and to let go and then watch it come back around. Okay, after breakfast cleanup, now I'm going to get on top of things and get about this time, and then I get handed a note. We need you to go do this.
And you're like,
uh-oh. Like that cartoon character, the person's like, and a little steam comes out. it's just like, but that's what needs to be done.
Yeah. Well, it's so lovely, right, Scott, because you illustrated practice for us, right? So in practice, we say, oh, there's nothing like control. Mm-hmm. Right? And you go, yeah, right. Well, all right, there's nothing like control. I believe you because I trust you and you're saying that. And then we have to find that experience of it. And life very beautifully gives us that experience.
Yeah.
So we with the best of intentions in the world, lay out a wonderful plan and go out to execute it. And life comes in and says, sorry, you've got to do something else. And we watch our experience of resistance, of control,
yes.
of wanting it to go this way because we think it should go this way,
yeah.
right?
And invest a lot of time to go this way.
And have a plan and all these
here's
the list and this is how it's going to go. And we have to keep having that experience in order for the teaching to become real.
Exactly.
For us, right? Where then it's not surprising to you when you receive that note that says course correct.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you stop planning. That's not the part we've let go of yet.
Yeah.
But then we realize that we're able to resiliently take that input. When the course correction happens, we just drop it and run off. Because the experience we have is if we continue to be tense and continue to want to take control, then we suffer so much.
Yeah, and it's just not helpful, obviously, to the person who's all tensed up, but it's really not helpful to
anybody. Yeah, it doesn't get things done. So you rapidly learn we have to get on board with life's plan.
Yeah, you might as well, you know.
You might as well. And it's painful, isn't it, Scott? That's the initial experience. It's painful because what happens that I have to come stinky to the meditation hall if I can't get a shower in?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I want. That's what takes care of me.
Yeah.
And that's what gets rubbed away in that process.
Exactly. That rubbed away in that image of the glue is really great because the release from that, you know, is so much quicker.
Yes.
You know, it's like...
You recover rapidly.
Yeah, and I could, you know, just talk about it out loud on the way down to do the thing.
Yeah.
You know, just getting it out of the head and not having to ignore it, but just, I see that and let it out and let's get to the cleaning.
Yeah.
And then on the way back up to the group, it's just like, I just chuckled because what came in was like, so glad I'm not in charge of my own life.
Yes.
Because what already was coming in was like, oh, now we can go up and have that tea. Da, 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 da. It was like, it's
no.
5 minutes before group, you know.
Yeah.
But just that place again, it was coming in again. Okay, now we're going to sit down again. And tea was like, I'm gonna. I don't know how to say it, but and
well,
it was just so funny because I would, if I could, take off, run away, not do the thing, but to have to be here to make the commitment to live in the place that I do. I'm gonna be here. I'm gonna go do the thing I was requested to do, and I'm gonna let go of this so I can actually clean the thing. You know, and I don't know. It's such in that laughter. It's just I could feel the incredible love. Of the lessons of that,
yes,
in a way that I would never ask for,
yes,
but now I do actually because I see what the transformation does.
Yeah, that having a structure that does not allow us to wander into that control place of being in charge of my life and how I do it allows us to encounter that. that that's the way that I'm held and I'm controlled. Not that I'm in control, but I am controlled.
Yeah.
And that if I let go of that and move with what is so in life, it's a much happier place.
Yeah.
Much happier place. And that's what we're doing. Right? We're not getting things done. We're not presenting something to be perfect. What we're practicing here is letting go that standard, that requirement for perfection, that sense of control in order to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so great about folks signing up for retreat, because to me that's the opportunity. You get to bump up against things you didn't even quite know were there.
Yeah, like you have to take your shoes off 3 times before you go in.
Yeah, and it gives us that opportunity to see those things and let go of them.
Don't move once you've sat down on the cushion. Yeah, and so it's not that we shouldn't move when we sit down on the kitchen, or we one of those times forget to change our shoes. But it's to notice what's going on for me.
Yeah.
You know, in that process of, oh wow, I'm irritated, or I'm uncomfortable, or what's going on with these folks, and what are they about? Or that's what I get to watch, because that's what makes me miserable. And we do come to that point, even though it takes us a while, and we never come to it perfectly, that we actually look forward to those occasions.
Such a gift.
Thank you. Laurie and then Shelly. Did I pronounce that right, Shelly?
Yeah, this has been quite a workshop even before I got here. I mean, really, for weeks. Getting ready to be here, and it seems that the fact that, and as I was going through it, like every part of my life was having something happened that was unexpected, stressful, not wanted.
Mercury retrograde, Laurie. You don't prepare to come to the monastery for visiting monks when Mercury is retrograde.
I just kept remembering, okay, I am not in charge of any of this, and how can I do it? How can I say yes to it? Which, boy, there were some things that it was really an opportunity to practice saying yes. And then when I fell on Friday, and I was like, how could I do this? You know, how could I injure myself so much the day before I went to the monastery? And that was the thing, I think, more than anything, that was, you know, maybe I can't go. And it's just all that was coming with that. How my life has been prepared for me to be gone for a month, and here I am. And now being here, and how to be able to be in practice as fully as I can be in practice, and also just taking care of what needs to be taken care of in this body and this form. Just all of that. I mean, it's like at moment to moment.
Yes, which goes back to what we were talking about with Scott, right? So it's that Ram Dass thing. Today it drops in that I have to go to the dentist. And so I pick up the phone, I make a call, and I put it on my calendar that on October 1st I'm going to the dentist. You could be dead on October 1st. Just because it's on the calendar doesn't mean that you get to go. Because that's the process of control, right? That we have an idea about what life is going to be, including what practice is going to be and what we get to practice. And I project for you, practice was coming to the monastery for a month to be fully present and integrated. And what did life do? Pardon?
Yeah. In a certain way.
In a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
And the practice is whatever is coming up in life. Life is the retreat.
Right.
Not going on retreat to the monastery.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so your retreat is now including something about being physically compromised in a place which requires you to be physical. Right? And that's what you get to practice with. And it's that tremendous place of what this retreat is about. There is nothing wrong. How am I okay with whatever it is that life is presenting me with? Because what I get really to experience is my sense of well-being independent of circumstances.
You know, that's really good, isn't it? Just independent and also to know that any idea about what that means,
yes,
you know, is not where the practice lives at all.
No.
In this way, then, oh yes, now I can be in the perfect practice. And of course, none of that happens. And to recognize this opportunity as a really big practice place,
yes,
you know, a kindness, you can be really then, just like somebody else was saying, the practice of unconditional love and kindness, and to really have that be where I'm living from.
Yes.
Not like a thing or like an act. How be able to live in that place regardless of what's going on, is what you were saying.
Yeah. That how can I access unconditional love and compassion? That is, can I be in the process of compassion instead of a process of there's something wrong, which is the same as what we started with Sequoia? Can I be in a practice of connection, not in the process of what separates me from everybody? It's the same process. And so to look to see how this is your opportunity to do this practice, which is live from compassion, which is what the practice is, not as an object or not as a thing, but as a way of being.
And the way of being, and it's a way of being in great love and respect for the being who's living it, and that's, you know, the most challenging. So then, okay, well, you know, where's the kindness here? Where's the compassion, and how is that being expressed and regarded?
So how do I include myself? Which is not something that we're allowed to do if we're listening to a voice that says you're a loser or you're unworthy or you're not lovable or you don't deserve it.
Or
you're too much trouble or you're the one who fell and now you're going to be a burden on everyone else. But to step out of that to go, well, how can I be good to this body? How can I be kind to this body? And include myself in as part of the community that will assist me and that I'm here to assist.
Yeah.
In all ways. And it's beautiful because life accounts for all of that. Right? It's only this that says that's not a possibility, that's mutually exclusive. If I'm hurt, I can't participate. Or if I'm hurt, it's my fault. Not kindness is also possible to embrace the human who's having that experience.
Yeah, thank you.
Shelley.
So I had a question, like these voices, you know, some of them originate because you suffered some experience, maybe from a certain person, and so it's there as a defense mechanism so that you don't have more pain inflicted on yourself. Mm-hmm. So now we're saying the goal is to ignore the voices and just kind of leave ourselves open and try to approach people with compassion and unconditional love. But if you had like repeated experiences with people or a person, and you've been burned several times, how do you take that and prevent yourself from feeling that pain again? Mm.
Good question. We have 7 days to explore that. it's something that comes up for us, right? So a couple of things. One, it's a great question. Two, it's not a question that we can answer in this group, but we will do that as we go through this retreat because it is an important one to look at. And I would level set that there is no goal about ignoring the voices. I mean, that is, to me, that's an interesting process for to watch because what this tries to do is to draw conclusions. Right, to interpret from whatever it's got going in order to do whatever it does to cause you to suffer, to simplify, to abstract, to state things in a particular way, and then for us to act in accordance with that. And so the goal is not necessarily to get rid of the voices or to ignore the voices or to whatever. We're in the process of learning to direct the attention. And especially in this practice, there are no shoes. Right? There's nothing you have to do, there's nothing you should do, there's nothing you are going towards, there's no outcomes. And so within that structure of how to be present in life, we get a sense of how to be from a place of compassion, and what the voices are in our lives will be revealed as we go through the retreat. So I would just sit with it and see how that question changes as you receive the information of what we do in the retreat. Yeah? Hold the question, and if it doesn't get answered, be sure to ask. You'll have an opportunity.
So, and then Sherry says that a lot of the voices come from karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand conditioning like, you know, like the way you were raised or society conditioned you, but when I hear the word karmic, I start thinking differently because maybe what I was taught karma means, is it referring to like a collective experience? Is it referring to prior lives?
Mm-hmm.
Karmic conditioning.
Well, Sherry's response whenever that question comes up is usually, karma is something we made up, for something we experienced but we don't know anything about.
Right. In this life.
Whatever, right? Because how would I know about previous lifetimes? How did anyone else know about previous lifetimes, right? But there's an experiential sense of something that we conveniently give a label to. One of the definitions we like is what's sitting on the sandwich board, right? The incessant drive towards what you deserve. If you just sit with that for a second, you get a sense of what that means, right? Mm-hmm. That there is something, we don't know where it comes from, and we could speculate, but we'll never know. But there's a pattern in our lives that we tend to see repeat itself over and over again. The useful part about that is not the question about what it is or where it comes from or why is it there, but the recognition that we do in this practice of bringing awareness to the fact that the pattern exists. If we can see that the pattern exists and not be reactive to it, then we have the opportunity to do something other than the pattern. Right? That's that behavior change we were talking about.
So you're talking karma like a behavioral cycle.
I didn't say that. No, it's interesting, right? I would just pay attention to that process for you, Shali, which is what is being said is being interpreted to mean something that you can do something with, right? Which prevents us from just being present to, okay, I don't know what that means or I don't get it, but somehow or the other it's there. There's just something that I will receive from this exchange that I don't have to do anything about. I don't have to figure it out. I don't have to make meaning out of it. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's what we're doing is watching how we are. Right? And how we are tends to be fairly universally the same thing, which is trying to make meaning out of something, to figure it out, to take it and do something with it. And then when that doesn't work, we're puzzled by why it's not working. But the reason it's not working is that that process is what's being maintained. We're always in that process. We're using that process to get over that process. And we can never see that.
I understand.
Yeah, thank you. Susan.
So it's funny you brought up that quote because I was thinking when people were talking, it's so refreshing because I think if you're here at the monastery, but at times I can think, you don't have to face what I face.
Uh-huh.
And then people start talking about getting the note. So my equivalent this week was I had a plan and kids got sick. That's like getting a note, right?
Yes, sorry.
I forgot my plan, and I get the call, oh, I've got 103 fever. I'm like, this? You know, but you can't, like, yell at somebody for having a fever. So I get off the phone, and I'm doing that, driving home.
Yes.
But I was thinking that for me, that incessant push toward what we think we deserve, or I find it that incessant push against life. That there's something inside that when I have a plan that I don't realize I'm attached to, that it triggers some sensation. Well, so here's what I watched this week. There's sensations in the body that resist the change.
Yes.
You know, that resist the note. No, I have to shower. I have to brush my teeth.
Yes.
And so I was watching it this morning, actually, as I was meditating, facing the wall. In my life, I've labeled it throughout the years, a variety of things.
PMS?
PMS, uh-huh. Hormones, now I'm labeling it menopause. But I think that's the story that's creating something about karma. Karma doesn't want me to see. It's just the devil. You know, it's just that thing that disrupts the ability to accept or something.
Yes.
Know? Because it's not really a big deal. You know, I get the information, 103 fever. I say, well, do you need any popsicles? I grab some Tylenol. You know, we'll see if I can get you a doctor's appointment. You know, and then I get off the phone, and it's like that
thing, whatever it is, starts creating a story. Well, how's she going to get this done? And how's she going to get that done? And, you know, she's 17. She's got all these classes. But I don't think she should take all. You know, I mean, I just not forgetting to. You just need to breathe and bring lots of unconditional love to yourself and her. And, you know, that's what we get to learn with practice. I don't know. I feel really uncomfortable with not knowing.
Yeah.
What is happening? You know, and believing it's wrong.
Yes.
And that people shouldn't be acting that way. And that I should be, you know, the shoulds of,
yes.
of life. So,
yes.
Anyway, as people were talking, that was just kind of for me, it was really comforting this morning to just sit and listen to the little pond and breathe and keep my eye on the tension as people were sharing their own experience of how they were keeping their eye on the tension.
Yes.
You know, it took a minute. Well, it didn't just take a minute. It took about 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, with the breathing and the laughter and the reflection, not even, it didn't really matter what you guys were saying. It was that there was a process of people looking while I was looking.
Yes.
And I was looking and I wasn't believing it. Oh, what about that? Remember that happened? And now you have to do this. How are you going to get all this done? And, you know, the whole thing that's building simultaneous.
Yes.
I wasn't trying to make it stop because you guys tell me you can't make it stop.
Yes.
But I wasn't paying attention to it.
That's right. Yes.
And
which is
a
salient point.
It is. And it's that tape thing or that, you know, that old glue thing. You know, all of a sudden, poof.
Yes.
Now I can hear you guys a little more clearly. Now I feel a little better.
You're here.
Released. I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Susan, I wish I'd stopped you along the way because there's so many things that are practice points that are so helpful in what you've illustrated, which is that incessant push towards what we think we deserve, that those sensations in the body, that with certain practice, I mean, the definition of suffering is wanting it to be different than it is, right? What we realize is that almost all the time, we are oriented towards this should not be happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's the attachment. It's the control, right? That I have some sense of being able to orchestrate life perfectly. And when life doesn't choose to cooperate, I am against life.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something so important in that whole discussion, which is, I recognize I'm attached to my plan. I'm attached to the story. It's not that you're against life. What we let go of is not how it should be, but the attachment to how we think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what changes the whole dynamic. Not that I get much more skilled at dealing with what life throws at me, or letting go of whatever's going on in order my plan. Well, now I have to be a super efficient mother, get all of what I planned done, and take care of my kid who's sick, and make sure that all the things that she has to take care of is also taken care of, right?
As you can imagine, I can't breathe.
Yes, yes, yes. And so the whole process this morning illustrates the practice, which is losing the attachment to or moving away from that orientation that life has to be this way and I can make it this way, and when life is not that way, I feel so much against it. Right? And so you sit. That's why we sit. Because when we sit, the body relaxes, the structure supports us, the attention is on the breath. And what we're doing is weaning ourselves out of the attachment to that process of there's something wrong and bringing the attention to being with how life is. Pond water, birds, sick kids, no shower, no cup of tea, it's all right. It's only all right when we're with it completely and not in a conversation about how it's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what it takes. It takes being willing to come and sit on the cushion with a sick kid and an unfinished plan and not having showered.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we choose. All right, that's our time. Thank you.